In 1993, a U.S. senator proposed banning imports from countries that use children in, quote, sweatshop labor. The result was 50,000 children laid off, and according to Oxfam, a large number of them became prostitutes, as it was their next best alternative. UNICEF found the non-prostitution alternatives to be, quote, more hazardous and exploitative. Can we keep these sweatshop workers out of prostitution and use consumer education, labor, or trade standards to make sure that they get better working conditions? Should we boycott? For an American concerned about the well-being of these workers, what is the best decision to make? You're listening to Upset Patterns. The term sweatshop is thrown around a lot, so for the sake of this podcast, we're going to define it as the apparel industry in the developing world. Sweatshops is an issue that most economists tend to disagree with the general public about. Economists from both sides of the spectrum find sweatshops to be productive for third world workers because it's better than their next alternative. So for example, Jeffrey Sachs, a prominent development economist, has said that my concern is not that there are too many sweatshops, but too few. Nicholas Kristof, a writer in the New York Times, is also a proponent of sweatshops, even writing a column called, quote, Two Cheers for Sweatshops. Paul Krugman, who blogs and writes for the New York Times, often from the liberal perspective, has observed that sweatshops have moved hundreds of millions of people from abject poverty to something still awful, but nonetheless significantly better. So the growth of sweatshop employment is tremendous good news for the world's poor. Where do economists even get off thinking that supporting such labor practices would be a good thing? Well, in the labor market, a worker's wage is determined by a lot of things. One of them is a worker's opportunity cost. What are their other options? So for these countries, the alternative is jobs with even lower wages or working longer hours outside in the sun. The labor can even be more physically hazardous than what you might imagine in sweatshops. Ben Powell, an economics professor at Suffolk University, did some research showing that the most contentious sweatshops actually have better wages and working conditions than other apparel factories in that town. So let's forget about this, right? Economists don't have any empathy. All they care about is dollars and cents. They have no emotions. What can someone who is concerned about improving the lives of these workers do? What are our different options? So here to talk with me today about it is someone who has worn clothes, Drew Dapridge. Drew, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Will. Pleasure to be here.
So doesn't it seem like we in the developed world with all of our resources can do something to improve these conditions?
Yeah, I would think we'd at least be able to affect their wages directly by boycotting or through foreign aid, just simply having the company itself increase the wages for the workers.
Foreign aid has a very mixed track record of success, right? They're development economists and people trying to figure out, given certain demographics or situations, how to improve a country's growth. It can be through roads, education, anti-malaria medicine, but foreign aid right now doesn't have an obvious answer. So yes, we could try to give them better alternatives, increase their education or the jobs available to them. But as of right now, there doesn't seem to be any obvious solution to really give them better opportunities.
What seems to be the issue with foreign aid? Why does it have a mixed track record?
Well, I think a lot of times developed countries can give money and it doesn't go to the intended source. So you might have a corrupt government. You also, if you give money to build a school, they might not have roads to get the materials there, or they have poor accounting, poor definitions of property rights. And so, you know, we think, oh, if you have $1,000, what you can do with that $1,000 in America doesn't always translate well into the developed world, where there can be corrupt leaders or there might not be running water. Like, a lot of things that we take for given aren't necessarily true in the developed world.
So the idea of throwing money at the problem really isn't going to be a viable solution.
Right, and I think it's a bit of a red herring, at least for the sweatshop issue, because, you know, if we did have a silver bullet solution to bring these countries out of poverty, I think we would work towards that. But the fact of the matter is, right now they have these jobs working in the apparel industry without revamping their entire economy. What are different options in affecting their liveliness?
So are consumers able to affect the wage issue through abstaining from purchasing, i.e. boycotting, something along those lines, if they're really interested in making a difference?
Right. Well, the thing with boycotting is that if the demand for those articles of clothing go down, then the demand for the labor of those workers also goes down, which lowers their wage even more. So I think in a lot of people's minds, when you boycott something, it's like you're telling a company, I don't agree with this. You know, you want to make a stand about it. But in the end, you're really just saying, I'm not going to buy your goods. And so they have to lower their prices. They have to lower their workers' wages.
So what about just improving their working conditions? I know that's a major issue with a lot of people. What can be done about that then?
You hear the anecdotal evidence about sweatshops where people are working long days in 100-degree rooms, right, where a simple ceiling fan would just make their lives that much better. Well, to a company, improving working conditions versus raising wages, they're indifferent about. They're both costs. Whereas a worker in a lot of these situations, they prefer the higher wage. So it might seem, yes, it's very cheap to have a ceiling fan, but it's a cost nonetheless. The money is going to come from somewhere. So Ben Powell, surveying Honduran sweatshop workers, 95% of the workers surveyed said that they would prefer a higher wage to better working conditions.
Interesting. I wonder if there's a threshold to that. At some point, I would assume, rather have the better working conditions.
Right. Well, I think, you know, it's tough to be in the shoes of these sweatshop workers. But really, when you're in such bad poverty, right, you're at like subsistence levels of living, every cent matters so much. And so being comfortable, the diminishing returns, right? So right now, you know, most Americans would like to be more comfortable in their workspace because we make, on average, tens of thousands of dollars a year, right?
Right.
Whereas in the case of these workers, an extra jump in wages matters so much more because they need more food. They want to feed their family.
So it sounds like boycotts aren't going to work. Foreign aid isn't going to work. What about just having consumers pay a little bit more if we could somehow verify that these products aren't made in a sweatshop?
So yeah, research does show that Americans would be willing to pay an extra $1.50 on their clothing, which would in effect double the wages of the relevant sweatshop workers. But you have to remember that even if all of the Americans in this poll that said they would be willing to pay that $1.50 do, there are still people on the margins that are left out. So when you double that wage, there will be people that lose their jobs in the sweatshop countries. And there is an argument that the demand for this labor is what economists call inelastic. So it's not very sensitive to price changes. But nonetheless, there will still be jobs lost. Paul Krugman actually made this observation in a blog post earlier this week where he said, at this point, the competition amongst developing countries, they no longer have to compete with the developed world. Increasing their wages or standards would not result in many jobs lost. This came under a lot of criticism from the blogosphere because really, he doesn't address these now unemployed workers. And everything in economics, there's a trade-off. For all these people whose wages are doubled, then there's some people left in the dust. And as really most evidence shows, these worse alternatives, do we really want to put workers in there? Then you get to a subjective trade-off between how many workers are we okay with going into prostitution or working 16-hour days of backbreaking labor in the sun, or, you know, even getting into the slave trade, essentially, this other group of people to have their wages doubled. And so even if it's very few, there are still going to be some that go to worse alternatives.
So consumers are willing to pay more. As you mentioned, this would displace some workers. What about government policies, embargoes, things like that to restrict trade to those companies using sweatshops?
So at one point, there was U.S. trade policy in the 90s that would put tariffs on, quote, sweatshop labor. And at one point, 100,000 Bangladeshi workers petitioned the U.S. Department of Labor to remove those trade restrictions because their jobs had been lost. These are the workers that were trying to help. And their jobs having been lost and going into worse alternatives, you know, they're asking for it back. You can see in practice, even if the U.S. policy was well-intentioned, those people were losing their jobs. And so they probably went to a more developed country, perhaps where the worker skills justified the higher wage that we were requiring. Or they were going to places where machines did more work. And obviously, you don't need to set standards on how much you pay a machine. There's an emotional reaction when you see sweatshop labor because we have so much in our country and in the developed world, and it seems like these people are getting nothing. Most people, when they approach the issue of sweatshops, they want to solve it as sort of a way to redistribute income. That's easier said than done, right? You can't just take a certain amount of money from America and put it back in the third world and not expect negative unintended consequences, whether it's people being displaced into worse jobs or in the case of foreign aid, you know, not all the money goes where you intend it.
So all of these options have some sort of trade-off. There must be an ideal sweet spot or optimal solution to this where we displace the least amount of workers and benefit the lives of the most.
History shows us, at least in the last century, that a country's best chance of getting out of poverty and making that transition from third world to first world is just straight up economic growth. A lot of these countries might be in poverty because of colonial history. We can place blame or whatever, but the fact is they are where they are today, and the developed world is where it is today. So what can we do now? A lot of economists then take the track record of sweatshops as it being a necessary part of industrialization. So the US, 200 years ago, had similar working conditions to what we call sweatshops now. And as long as we have progress, these countries can get themselves out of poverty. So the wealthier they get, the better institutions they can have, and they can then get better education, and it's sort of just a cyclical effect. There are four examples of countries that today were sweatshop countries as recently as 50 years ago. South Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Singapore. Today, those countries are very competitive globally. They have a lot of high-skilled labor and in a lot of ways compete with America. But 50 years ago, much like a lot of the developing world right now, the only way they could compete was with their very cheap, unskilled labor.
So what I'm hearing you say is basically the best way to help sweatshop workers is to increase the demand for sweatshop labor, so buy as many sweatshop products as possible?
That's one way to think about it.
Counterintuitive, but that works.
So a lot of this research and what history has shown us is that the intuitive solutions for improving the lives of the workers don't always go as we intended. But I think that if we have patience and allow these countries to gradually grow, they do have the ability to get out of poverty. Upset Patterns is hosted by Will Comprenal from Tequila Mockingbird Studios in Austin, Texas, and produced by Paige Jensen-Slattengren. My guest today has been Drew Dapridge. Want more sources relevant to today's podcast? Have any questions, comments, discussion points, or suggestions for future podcast topics? Visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/upsetpatterns or email upsetpatterns@gmail.com.